the state of Texas, barbecue is a religion. And to that end, Matt Pittman of Meat Church is the televangelist. Whether it's rubbing elbows with or cooking for celebrities, or Stone Cold Steve Austining a couple of beers in front of a raucous crowd, Matt is truly doing the Lord's work. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Clinton, and you are listening to Smokeless, the podcast of note and record. In the following episode, Matt discusses building his brand, growing his flock, some of his favorite celebrity interactions, the exciting life of a volleyball dad, and what he did only moments after having a vasectomy. We will pick up the conversation there as Matt joined Justin, Nick, and Wayne in the still under construction Smokeless Podcast Studios from an undisclosed location somewhere in South Dallas. Enjoy.
So, Matt, hey, we're starting a podcast and we don't.
Looks like
we've never done that before. And it's not necessarily our podcast is not about barbecue. Barbecue is the thing that kind of brought us together in this world. It's something that we all have in common, but there's so many other things that we have in common.
I think what people want to hear is the bullshit that we have to go through. We have our challenges, right? Not everybody can see their way through the challenges. I think that's where most people fall off. But some people do, people like yourself, that, you know, you have found a way to insert yourself into an industry that you didn't come up in, that you didn't train for academically, and yet you are just crushing it. I mean, what, you're just under a million fucking subscribers on YouTube. Did you hit it this week?
Should this week.
That to me just floors the shit out of me.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Because you've built a whole business model teaching people how to cook, teaching people how to use fire, and you're self-taught.
Yeah.
You know?
It's crazy.
Right. But you've made a whole business, a whole brand out of this.
Like, I talk a lot about these content creators. I'm like, I was doing this before that was a term. And
yeah.
But now, like, you go to big events and they're being brought to events where they're the attraction. And,
sure.
You know, they don't have the depth of knowledge that, like, any of you guys have with why they're doing this. They just could, like, watch you do something, like, oh, and they go repeat it. And mm-hmm. Now they're a thing. So,
yeah.
And they think it's a lot, you know, like, since COVID. They think this is easy because they jumped on TikTok, which I did not. I was trying to keep my business afloat during COVID, but
yeah,
you know, as fast as they all grew in there, like, you know, those guys with 4 or 5 million followers that are like, they really can't even cook. And by the way, this is what I'm about to say isn't just like isolated cooking. It's the same in every industry, like
for
same
sure.
in the music right. industry for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, these guys are amassing 4 or 5 million followers on TikTok and they think they're a big deal, and maybe they are, but they look for the easy way to, you know, create the long-term business, which I think that's what's going to bite them in the butt is I think they're, it's not a flash in the pan,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think TikTok is the long game.
What do you think is the long game?
Well, I don't really know, but necessarily, but I think I have this belief that say this next weekend, somebody random is going to go make ribs, for instance. I don't think they're going to go on TikTok and look up how to do it. Now they might,
right.
But I use that short form entertaining stuff to like, you scroll and you see something that looks good or delicious, mm-hmm. and I might save that, and like mm-hmm. one day I might make it. But mm-hmm. if I'm not, say you're making anything, doesn't have to be ribs. It could be like chicken cacciatore. I feel like you're going to go to either Google or YouTube to search it, and YouTube is the number two biggest search engine behind Google.
Yep.
And Google will give you YouTube results. So that's why we're about the long form. It's not shtick. It's like
sure,
truly educational.
Yes.
That, now I don't know if that's the right answer. There's probably more than one answer. Because our social numbers are growing way slower than they used to, because we don't ever get together to go make clickbait videos. You know, like we don't get our team together and go, let's go make a viral BS video tomorrow. That mm-hmm. stuff drives me crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This was like 2 years ago this happened, but me, Chris Lilly, and Tuffy Stone ran a truck going to a liquor store to look for bourbon. And I showed him a guy had made a video where he took a whole rib roast and like dunked it in, you know, peanut butter and aged it for a month.
Oh my God.
And then he ends up like, you know, breaking it off and cutting it and eating it. And it's like, oh, it's nutty and all this stuff. And Tuffy's reaction, the first words out of his mouth were, that is the stupidest shit I've ever seen in my life. But the video had a gajillion views, you know, because it's like outlandish. I'm not, I'm not here for that.
It's like the chef reactions guy.
Yeah, yeah. He's funny. I didn't like him at first. I like him now.
No, I love that guy. Awesome. Have you seen it, Dustin?
No.
He's a chef somewhere, and it'll be like a split frame of him, and then like one of these ridiculous. I don't even know what they call
it. It used to be like a home cook making food and they're talking about what they're doing and he's just commentating alongside. It's hilarious.
It's the people who make stupid shit just to frustrate you and be like, this is stupid, but they do it on purpose. And at the end, he says whether or not he'd eat it or whatever, but
sometimes he'll eat it.
Yeah. I don't have TikTok, so I don't really have that. I don't see a lot of that stuff, but I know what you're talking about as far as people making ridiculous.
Well, they're on Instagram too. Like we have TikTok, and we have 450,000. Like it's not bad, but I joke when people come up to me like, "Oh, we know you from TikTok." I'm like, little part of me dies when you say,
"Oh,
can you please say you know me from somewhere?"
Yeah, that's funny.
Because what we do is we take our long form, like a 10-minute cooking show. And then they'll distill it down into a minute video,
yes,
which isn't as good as let's just stick with ribs. If we're going to make ribs, a TikTok would do better if we said, all right, we're about to make a 60-second TikTok about ribs. That will perform better than if I take, you know, a 10-minute video and shrink it down because my tone might not be right. You know, they're like trying to grab
just
little
jump cutting everything.
Exactly. So it's kind of kludgy. So, you know, to have 500,000 followers when we're just kind of not really putting a lot of effort into it is okay. But also the comments on TikTok are terrible. Like that's like... They're savage.
Are they really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's gotten a little better, but yeah, you get a lot of people. I mean, I guess your stuff gets shown to so many non-followers there, and your account can grow really fast on TikTok, much faster than other platforms. Yeah, there's a lot of idiots out there for sure.
You read it? You check it out?
No, I mean, a little. Because, you know, social media is how I accidentally started this business. I wasn't trying to start a business, but I worked in downtown Dallas, IT job. My wife was, you know, we were dating. No, we were married. We were married then. We worked together, but I ran IT and I didn't have Facebook. In 2013, I didn't have Facebook because I hate Facebook. And today's a great example. You know, when you open Facebook, you're going to see all everybody's political crap that you don't care to see. Mm-hmm. It's that. I don't see that. I'm going to see like a picture of my niece or something. Mm-hmm. Right. So and there's a lot of drama on there. So I didn't have Facebook. But then when Instagram came along, I'm like, oh, that's cool. It's visual.
Felt the same way.
So I could put my food on there and then I have to, you know, it was easy. But I always give the same example. Like I put a steak. It was like, here's a steak I cooked on a Big Green Egg seasoned with Me Church Holy Cow for, I don't know, 2 minutes aside until it was, you know, 125 or whatever. But people were immediately like, thank you for telling me how you did that. So then I just leaned. I always had a knack for teaching. So I was like, all right, well, I can cook and I can tell you how I did it. So that's how it created the business, but I wasn't trying. So I just kept doing it and it kept taking off.
Interesting hearing you talk about the business now compared to the last time you and I saw each other and what the business was back then. I mean, those are the very, very beginning stages and it felt from my perspective, it was the spice rub was kind of, that was just it. It was the spices, you know, but hearing you talk about it now, It's a media business.
It's crazy because I just did this interview for this Texas thing I just came from, and they were like, one of the questions is, what is Meat Church? And I always say it's two things. I say the seasoning first because that's where our revenue comes from. And I say, then it's Matt Pittman. And they're like, what's that mean? I said, whoever decided to cook for this week. And it's not just that. That's the flashy thing. But it's teaching. And then, you know, we do a lot of they're like, well, we heard you're the barbecue guy for the stars. And I said, well, I don't know what you call it, but we do, you know, since we don't have a catering, you can't pick up the phone and call to get catering like you can at your restaurants.
Right.
It's just like, if I want to do it or not. So we just do the flashy stuff. So then we get put on this unfair pedestal. They're like, oh, he cooked for Post Malone Saturday and he cooked for, you know, so that helps too a little bit.
Of course it does.
And it sounds fun too.
Yeah.
And that's the part that I love doing stuff like that. And I think we realized the value of doing stuff like that before. I think it was at a meat fight one year and everyone was talking about at the judges table shit that we have all bartered for through barbecue. Mm-hmm. And like someone said that they bartered for a root canal. Someone was like a wedding cake. There was all kind of things that there was like, oh, well, let's use our thing or shit. I'm guilty. Going to shows to see live music.
No.
Oh, I have reached out, you know, we convinced Texas Monthly to take us to Brooklyn to do a pop-up event around the fact that what I was trying to actually do was feed the Allman Brothers at the Beacon.
Yeah.
And both of those things happened. Except the day we're flying out, Greg Allman got sick, and so they canceled that show. But we still did this event in Brooklyn, me and Wayne and Barrett Black. And we partnered up with Hill Country Barbecue and Texas Monthly.
Yeah.
Got on board, and we did a Texas Takes Over Brooklyn pop-up to as a way to just, you know.
Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm. That was no shame in that.
Hell no, dude.
Good thing is we're in the food business. Everybody's got to eat.
Right. So.
And speaking of that, you know, and just looking at your website, one of the things that really stands out to me is your food styling and your photography.
Oh, man, so good.
It is just so fucking good, dude. It is really amazing because descriptions and text is one layer, right? I mean, people following the recipes, following the description sets, but being able to see it and see it stylized that way, it's a spectacular job.
I appreciate that.
You know, any I send people that way. If you really want to know what food should look like, go.
Absolutely.
I'm not kidding.
What's crazy is we don't have a food stylist, but my daughter-in-law.
Who does it?
So there's two people now, but my daughter-in-law, who's 31, she started dating my oldest son in eighth grade, and they're married and have two kids. So she's like amateur photographer, never taken any classes or anything. So she started shooting my food, and we're like, oh, this is good. Well, at the time, I had a video guy on my team, and he did still photos, and I'm not saying his were bad, but I preferred hers to his.
Yeah.
So she became our, even though she is the COO at Meat Church, she comes to, we shoot once a month. We try to do four cooking shows in a day. So we basically have the month covered out of one day. She comes to those and shoots the whole thing. Now, she's on maternity leave right now. And so there's been other guys, thank you. Yes. There's been other guys doing it for the past few weeks. But here's the cool thing about that. I've said no to a cookbook forever. I'm like, I don't have the time. And I'm like, I have this belief that you're not ready for a cookbook. And like now all kinds of people are getting cookbooks that I think is funny, but I wanted to wait till I was like ready, where I thought, okay, now I can have my name on a book and feel good about it.
Mm-hmm.
Thought that, well, but I still wasn't going to do it. Cause I thought all the hours I can put into that, I could put it into something else and make way more money. Yeah. And that's how I operate. But one day after Kate was pregnant with Bo, her 2-year-old, and I looked at her, we were sitting in our living room, and I thought, one day I won't be here. And I'm like, what if Bo had a book that was his grandfather's recipes and his mom took all the pictures? So your point of the pictures, literally her being pregnant with him that's what broke me to like, okay, I should do this now because it'll be here forever. But it's cool that it's all her pictures.
Yeah.
Like our trailer, anywhere you see photos, in a Shields and there's an end cap, it's her pictures. So that's why I always talk about, here's how the family business is going. So it's neat.
Yeah.
Now we've worked with brands like, well, I used to be a spokesperson for Academy for a little while, and they would bring like a food stylist on a shoot. So, you know, we watch and learn. But I have another guy on my team named Don. I call him the Swiss Army knife. Don does everything. Like he'll go get you a bag of ice or wrangle a shoot, whatever. Mm-hmm. But he is now like kind of mini food styling and it's just like our last shot. Whenever we do a video and we like make the prepared final thing, he's trying to make it look all pretty, but we're not in there like McDonald's with spray that you can't eat. It's not like that, right?
We're not using inedible ingredients.
Exactly. Like you can eat it all. It's all real. By the way, our shoots are all real. Like what you see is what you get. We don't fake anything. But yeah, we have to make it look.
Do you finish eating it when you take the bite?
Well, with my crew, everything, there are no leftovers. Like we shot Thursday and we had a lot of food and it all got eaten.
How do you come up with what you guys are going to do for the shoot? I have the hardest time at the restaurant of we go through this thing of like, oh my God, we have to create content. You know, there's just this pressure of constantly of having to create a shot or a thing to do to put out there. And it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. I think mostly it's exhausting for us because half the time what we come up with or what we shoot looks like shit and we don't want to use it. Right. But it's just the thought process of what can we make that is going to stand out from the millions of other Instagram videos on the feed. If you've ever liked one barbecue video, or in my case, if you like one drummer, all of a sudden, like your feed gets inundated. What's the thought process behind creating that? How do you decide what you guys are going to do?
Well, the first little while it wasn't hard because it was like, this was before the cookbook talk. I said, YouTube to me is a visual cookbook. So there's certain things that we need to have. And so for like the first 200, it was like, obviously, you know, the core stuff. So we want to make sure we had all of that. And then my cooking, if I pull my, like barbecue is obviously what we're known for, but that wasn't the first thing I started cooking outside. Crawfish is where I started. And so I was like, okay, I started looking at a calendar year and I thought, well, my cooking is very seasonal. The beginning of the year when crawfish come in, I'm doing that. And then obviously we're all doing grilling outside this time of year. And then, you know, I do a ton of holiday stuff, like a real big focus on holiday stuff. So I kind of looked at the things that I do throughout the year. I'm like, I need a video for everything that we do that people like. And it's hardly anything has ever been like, oh, I saw this thing down the road. We should go do that. It's all been pretty much personal experience. But then this year, when we went through the winter and got through the holiday stuff, got through the first of the year, that's like I call the nuclear winter of barbecue, January, February. Yep. Obviously, yeah. Good weather here. Mostly, but in other parts of the country, there, you know, there's, I don't know, 30-40% of our audience that their smokers might be put away, you know, under snow or something. So we shifted to comfort food because I love like chicken fried steak, meatloaf. Like I would do Southern, I'm from Tennessee and Alabama. I would do like Southern food if I didn't know what barbecue was. So we were doing a lot of comfort food stuff and it didn't get the clicks. It didn't like the world on fire. One or two of them did really well and the rest of them were kind of like, but that was a new area where I'm like, maybe like people come to me. Let me say this the right way. One guy came to me and he said, dude, I come to you when I want to make barbecue. I know you have video on it. He said, but I've known you for a long time and you cook a lot more things. You should start to video that. And I said, well, I do have four seasonings that are what I call gourmet seasonings, lemon, pepper, garlic, and herb, things that aren't barbecue rubs. I'm like, well, if I did these comfort food meals, I could talk about those and maybe I could start to get some stay at home moms or whoever just wants to know how to cook Marry Me chicken or whatever the case may be. It was mixed results, but we never regret anything we do. Like we do a lot of fish and that does not get the clicks at all. Like we'll put out a fish video and it gets like a third or a fourth of the videos that a steak video would get. And we're bummed because it's a lot of money and time and effort into these productions. But I'm like, you know, I don't just cook brisket. Like if somebody wants to know how to make salmon four different ways, well, we've got all those different recipes.
Well, let's be honest. We're all at the age now where we probably should be watching more fish videos and eating more fish.
Yeah. I should not touch any.
My cardiologist would definitely be in support of that. That's for sure. More fish videos.
So it's a mixed bag. I mean, I do get ideas. Like last year was my first year at the Masters. And when I walked out, I said, we should do pimento cheese for the Masters because at Red Dirt, its second year, we served my pimento cheese on something and I still can't remember what. So it's been on the website since 2015. And by the way, pimento cheese is, as y'all know, pretty easy. Mm-hmm. It's just like mix five things together in a mixer and you're done. It was the easiest video we've ever done and it crushed. But we put it out Masters Week. So we'll have some of that in our head. Like, okay, is there something timely coming up that we should say, oh, it's Memorial Day. We're making ribs with your family. It gets a little added push. But we're not doing anything too crazy yet. We've yet to do anything that's clickbait on YouTube. And some people could call me an old man because I'm not budging, but I'm just really trying to stay true to who we are.
But don't you think it provides you a more stable base of viewers?
Actual fans.
Fans. You have qualified viewers. That are truly consuming your content because of the content, not because of the shock value.
So that's when I'm talking about the long game. I'm thinking if someone knows me, know what they do, I think odds are they might be like, oh, let's go see if Meat Church has done it and look it up versus going to these entertaining clickbaity guys on social. Now, I'm not saying what they're doing is wrong. Like if I was 28 years old and an engineer and could quit my job to go make a video every day, I'd probably do it. I mean, you know, if you can make a good living like that and be your own boss, I'd get it. But I just try to show the difference in us. And plus, you can have our food. We don't have a restaurant, but that's by design. We've turned down a bunch of offers to build restaurants. But
it's probably a good move.
No, no kidding, man.
Well, it's because I've been mentored by a lot of guys like you that are like,
right now.
But, you know, I mean, you guys would know better than anybody, but every single person, friends like you, you know, are like, no. Even when we've had very beautiful restaurants laid out in front of us, but I'm fortunate that we grew this business to where it's like, okay, this is a really big business without it. Like, don't air this part, but I made a comment to a friend, oh, Pittman doesn't even have a restaurant. And I'm like, my business is way bigger than your restaurant. And I'm not saying that in a diss, like what you do is harder. I, you know, I hold you guys in the highest regard because your food has to be awesome every single bite that you're open. Well, you can't have my food. So that's why I'm like unfairly up here. But, you know, we obviously do do a lot of food and wine festivals, barbecue festivals. We do a lot of events where it's not like we make crappy food or it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
We have a good seasoning. You do get to have it. Yeah. I'm not just making and that's important to me. I don't want to be, there's a lot of people in our industry that you can never have their food. I don't want to be that guy. I want to be out there. I want to be at events that our customers at. I want them to have our stuff. That's why we like doing Troubadour. And
right. You're doing a live fire thing at Troubadour this next weekend.
But that way, for me, it's about, I can go do things and I can be fulfilled. I can make my food. I can interact with people. Just like somebody walks in your restaurant and says, that's the best beef ribs I've ever had. I can still get that gratification, but I can pick and choose when we do it. You know, I don't have to be at it all the time.
I'm kind of curious, like what does the structure of your business look like in terms of like the roles and just parts of the business that you have in order to support all this? You know, there's a lot of different aspects to it.
It's mostly, so my right and left hand, my oldest son, Christian, his wife, they are like, I say they run Meat Church. 2 years ago, I talked about maybe stepping out to where we had interest to acquire us and we weren't going down that road. But I thought, man, we've caught lightning in a bottle. I would like to be able to do, I said, I want to be wholly creative. Like I would love to just cook and do whatever I want to do and not have to worry about the day to day. So someone advised me you should hire a president. Well, I thought it'd be better for them if I train them, which means I'm in more to train them, but it means a lot because they're family and they care like crazy amounts. So they're both over everything in the business. There's nothing in the business that has my name on it except for the personality and social media stuff. Otherwise, the business can now finally run without me. But under Kate, she has a wholesale team, which we have quite a few wholesale managers because that's a really big part of our business now. Huge. Like we're number one seasoning in Academy, Bucky's, Ace Hardware. We sold Ace Hardware $10 million last year. It's insane. It's big. It's insane. Insane. Like I don't even understand it. So the wholesale unit is extremely important. She's also over brand marketing. So her and I do that together. So she is responsible for we send an email every Wednesday morning. Our weekly videos come out every Wednesday and Kate has an email that everything's free with us. It's like, we're just giving you a free recipe. Mm-hmm. So the email's like, last week was pulled pork, like hickory pulled pork. But then beneath it is what I'm wearing for sale. And, you know, there's other things we have for sale, but it's not a hard sale. Our emails are never like, hey, we're having a deal. Come buy this. It's like, just here's free content. Mm-hmm. So she does all of that. And then, Christian we have a brick and mortar store, so he oversees that. I forgot with Kate, she oversees all production. Our stuff is made by a co-packer. So she's the one making sure that we're producing enough. She's buying all the supply, not the seasoning, but everything else. Christian has the store. He has like all like events. He has customer service. So all the support people come up to him. He has all the facilities. So we have multiple properties. So he has to do all of that. So they got a lot, but we're not the biggest company employment wise. Like we have less than 20 people, which to be our size is not a lot, but I strategically outsource almost everything I can. Like outsource CFO services. Mm-hmm. I outsource a lot. Like I growing up in IT, one of my bosses looked at me and when we were taking our email to the cloud, we were really good at hosting email. And he said, it's great that you're good at hosting email, but we don't make any more money because you're great at hosting email. So I've always carried that with me. Doesn't mean you should outsource everything, but it does keep me from having a huge staff. Mm-hmm. Now my co-packer, we're 99% of his business and he's got like 50, 60 employees. So if we did have manufacturing at some point, which I don't really want to be in that business, you know, we'd have a lot more people.
Mm-hmm. So let's jump back to IT. Okay. There was a point in time where that's what you were doing and that was your thing. And I guess you had a little something going on the side here, but at what point were you like, you know what, I'm going to try to do this instead? And, you know, was it scary as hell? Like, you know, anyone who's making, I mean, that's a big change to make. It's a crazy thing to say out loud. Someone who's, you know, you have a degree in finance, right? Mm. And you're doing IT to say, I'm going to quit and I'm going to sell barbecue rub.
Yeah. It's crazy. It wasn't a hard decision for me because you have to set the stage that I tell people I didn't figure this out at 25. Mm-hmm. So I just turned 50 late last year. So I figured it out in my 40s. When I say figured it out, like Meat Church is 11 years old as of last month. So halfway through that, 5 years in, I was like, this is a thing. I mean, first couple of years was a hobby. The third and fourth year.
You were doing them consecutively. Yes. You were still had a day job and you were, okay.
Year four and year five, hardest 2 years of my life. Like, if my wife's here, she gives a great perspective. Like, I'm not trying to be funny. I probably should have been divorced because burning the midnight oil, every vacation day I took was to go do an event, you know, to like go to Atlanta to cook for Big Green Egg or whatever. But, you know, the way we started the business, it was on the side. So I have a good career job, officer in a company. When I started dating my wife, she had boys in the second and fifth grade. They're now 26 and 31. Well, they were both in, one was at the end of his college career and one was just getting in when it was time for me to leave. So she wasn't real interested in me leaving my comfortable officer of the company job. So, but I'd only ever shared my numbers and our revenue and stuff with one person who really kind of helped mentor me. And I was like, it, you know, it just kept going up. Like, our revenue was doubling every year. And I would tell him, like, we did this month. We did this month. And I said, when's it going to go down? And he's like, finally, he said, Matt, I've been meeting with you for like over a year. He's like, if you keep doing what you're doing, it's not going to go down. So stop talking like that. But obviously, that's no guarantee. But I had got to the point revenue wise where I'm like, I need to go do this because now my bring home was a little more than my salary. And I wasn't trying to sell my wife on a bill of goods. Like, oh, if we do this and if we do that, we can make that. And she wanted no part of me leaving. And she had a couple reasons. But the main one was she was like, if you, she's not wired to be on the go and on the run like I am. And she's like, if you don't have a job, you're never going to be home. So that was, that's what I kept hearing. But then it clicked with me one day. It was Father's Day 6 years ago. My dad had been over and he said, Tracy mentioned you might be leaving your job. And I said, well, she did, because she had never really been open to it. So that night I walked beside her bed and I'd printed out one piece of paper with like bullet points on it. And I said, I need to give my boss notice that I'm going to leave, but I don't have to leave tomorrow. We can build a plan. And I said, and here's why. And I'm like, I'm not selling you something. I just walked it. This is what we did. This is where we're at. And she looked at me and she said, Matt, why would you ever quit that job? And that's when the second thing hit me. She cared about the stability of that job. And I realized that and I was like, okay, we're good. And anyway, so that was right before COVID started. That was, I think that was 2019, because 2020 ended up being huge for us because
everybody was at home.
Everybody's home cooking. Yeah. Now everybody started TikTok. I didn't, because, but our business shot up to where we like tripled our revenue that year. So that was helpful. But
so
the story's like really documented. I got interviewed over it, even by our local Channel 8 here. Cause I'll never forget. They said, did you leave the door open to go back? And I said, oh, the door's open, but I'm not walking through it. And I was in IT. Stuff's changed so much now. I wouldn't know what the hell to do anyway.
Right.
I could just, you know, consult or something. But, yeah, it was a big deal to her, but I wasn't nervous because I skipped this part. I told you, I figured it out in my 40s, not being so good and bad, not being 25. Well, the bad side was that I ended up having a lot more responsibility. I've got four kids, you know, mortgage, and like, you know, they depend on me. My wife stayed home after the fourth one, so it had to work. But the CEO at Traeger, Jeremy's a really good friend of mine, and he said, I get asked this question more than any question. He went to Harvard. He's like, when should I leave? When will I know? Are you gonna be nervous? Whatever. And I looked at him and I said, I'm not nervous now, because our sales, you know, they're not just gonna disappear. So, and then I'd also partnered with Traeger, and they had given me like a pretty good year, I'll call it a salary, to do what I was doing. So that helped her a lot mentally. I said, well, even if, she was like, what if somebody gets sick off our seasoning and we get sued? And I said, well, if this thing disappears, I still can at least pay the electric bill with this Traeger money.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, once you realize you're going to leave, you can no longer be in corporate America, because every single meeting you go in, you're like, when is this going to be over? When is this meeting done? And
yep.
I couldn't go back.
The thought of being in that environment and being constrained by all the rules and everything else, it would, I couldn't.
Meetings, like sitting in a room with a conference table where every meeting's an hour, and, you know, just the rigmarole of someone telling you what to do.
This is different.
Right. This is different. You know, if you need to go and talk about something for 5 minutes and schedule for an hour, you're sitting there for an hour.
Right.
You waste your time.
Right.
And anyway. Yeah.
So I want to ask, because I know that people ask you shit all the time about, you know, we get asked all the same questions all the time. You know, what kind of firewood do you use? Blah, 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 blah. But I want to ask you this question because I know the answer, and I just kind of want to give someone some props. So I just want to talk about the name Meat Church. Okay. And I just want you to talk about how you landed on that name and where it came from.
That's a great story.
Pretty please.
Yeah, great story. So, you know, we were competing in barbecue. My brother and I just did, you know, some competitions. But I always tell people we weren't trying to be world champions. It was like we're just trying to go have a good time on Saturday and, you know, do good and hang with our families and maybe drink a little. But I had remembered that our friend Alice, who runs Meat Fight, had she was at Slow Bone and she, on a Sunday morning, so almost lunchtime, and she had tweeted like a picture of her tray of barbecue. And this isn't the exact quote, but it said something to the effect of, I'm about to have my hashtag Meat Church.
Right.
And I have the tweet screenshot somewhere. I just remember the hashtag Meat Church. And I was like, that's funny. Mm-hmm. So it stuck with me. So fast forward, we were here in Oak Cliff at Barbecues, Blues, and Bandits, like a local unsanctioned competition. And
I was
Alice,
there for that.
Really?
Her and her husband were there. And I remember asking like, hey, can I use this name? And they're like, yeah, whatever. Sure. But then Mike, her husband, ended up giving me advice down the road on how to trademark it. So I heard through the grapevine, I don't think I've ever actually asked Alice this, but she told someone she gave away the only name better than Meat Fight for free. But that's where it came from. But I was raised Southern Baptist, so I was really nervous about it. But I had other mm-hmm. thoughts in my head. It wasn't just about seeing that, but we always cooked out on Sunday. So I played hockey most of my life, and my games were on Sunday early evening. So a lot of times I could come home and cook out.
Yeah. Okay. And, obviously indoor, like it's not like you're going out to the pond.
Right. Yeah. No Alabama, frozen ponds here.
Tennessee.
But, okay. You know, and then obviously all my football background and, you know, tailgating and all that, it's like I cooked a lot on Sundays. I'm like, that kind of worked. But I always say, like, for me, grilling and cooking out is like the hanging out. It's this.
Right.
It's the fellowship of
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
So it worked. So I went with it and was nervous until my granddaddy, who's a deacon in the church, he just asked me what the name meant. And I told him, he's like, okay. And he went. I'm like, okay, I'm good.
Nice.
Did have one other moment. I was at an egg fest in 2014. Aaron Franklin did a demo right in front of me. And I remember he walked off from talking to me and up is walking like a priest, like, black shirt, white square.
And
like, yeah. And I was like, oh God, here we go. And he was like, Meat Church, huh? I said, yes, sir. He said, that's a church I can get behind. I was like, all right, we're good.
That's awesome. And Alice is Alice Lasad, and Meat Fight is one of the greatest charity organizations that exists on this planet. So would do anything for Alice. I'll go to Meat Fight and judge anytime she asks. It's, you know, it's just something that, it's one of those things that you participate in and it's fun, but you also get to really see the impact of, from a charity standpoint, of changing and helping people's lives who have MS. So
yeah.
It's a really amazing thing. I would love to see it grow. She had talked before about it possibly being able to be in other cities. And I hope that that happens one day, but
we've donated to it every year since.
Yeah.
Like we always try to like really,
yeah,
help and pay it forward with that. And 100%. It is a lot of fun. And the lady that taught my kids to swim literally has MS. And mm-hmm. I don't know if I knew at the time or after, but she's like received like Meat Bike from them. And so yep. Kind of full circle. So it's super cool, but great, great charity event.
It is cool. And I think part of the reason she keeps inviting me back to judge is because I always donate every year when I'm there. And I'm just like, when they start auctioning off the bikes and everyone gets fired up and you see the people on the stage that talk about how that bike changed their life, it's just like you keep raising the auction paddle. You're like, I'll take another one. It's a really amazing thing. So y'all check out Meat Fight and see what they're all about, and see where Meat Church's name came from.
They have a lot of events now too. It's not just that one.
Yeah, you know, there's Burger a lot Fight, of things, Chicken so. Thing, and
yep.
the whatever they do, it's worth going and being a part of. That is for sure.
It's worth going and watch all these classically trained chefs make barbecue, and
right,
it's fun.
So
and
that,
barbecue guys judge.
Yeah, that okay, and that is what it's all about. You have all these fancy chefs who are made to cook barbecue. They always do brisket, sausage, ribs, and then there's a wild card. And then the judges' table are all Texas barbecue guys, pitmasters and restaurant owners, and we get to judge the shit out of them, which is awesome. And it's usually sponsored by a bourbon company or a brewery. So we just get to sit on the stage and drink and eat food that's sometimes good, but mostly bad. And we talk shit. And
but it has progressively gotten better over the years.
It really has.
Because that first couple of years
was rough.
Very
rough.
That's where we first met. I picture with you out front of the one of that old, was it Four Corner or? It's one.
Yeah, it was the old
move. The old
before they moved. Yeah. I was gonna go back and find the first picture I had with each of you, and I know for a fact that's that one. And yours was at Texas Monthly when you gave me a shirt at one in Austin. Probably won't remember that. You gave me a Stanley shirt. I still have it.
I do remember that. Wow. I mean, I don't remember that being the first time I met you though.
I thought it was, but maybe not. I definitely know it's when I'm hey, adjusting. But anyway,
probably we've all met each other through some event like that, whether it was Pitmaster's Picnic for Cafe Momentum or Meat Fight or the Barbecue Fest. I miss going to those things for that reason, because I feel like that where the world of barbecue was kind of at that time, those things hadn't really been happening. And so we were all really excited. Mm-hmm. And it was the only time we ever got to see each other, you know, in a year. Like, we would see each other once or twice a year at these things, and it was really, really great. And then, I don't know what happened. It just kind of, it became not really about that anymore. I feel like from some of the organizers' standpoint, we kind of got lost in the, it's a barbecue thing, but you know, we're doing this other thing. You guys are,
it started out a little bit where the focus was on us, and it was kind of elevating the stuff that we were doing. And then it shifted to where we were there to basically draw attention to what they were doing and elevate what they were doing and became a backstory to it.
And then you still only got the same amount of money to show up.
If any.
And it never covered everything that you needed to be there. And then it's just like, I can't shut the restaurant down to go do this year again.
Or you're in the restaurant grinding 6-7 days a week, and then there's an event, you know, on your day off or whatever it is, or your afternoon or your evening.
5 hours away.
Yeah. You know, and it's kind of like, well, I can take the time for myself, or am I obligated to do this because I need to do this to build the business? And so often that takes the case, you know, that takes the precedent. But for me anyway, making that choice over and over and over again took its toll.
Right. Is that when you kind of?
Yeah, we had to start backing away
a little bit. What comes to mind is the GIF, the meme, whatever GIF.
Yeah,
how do you say it? So I'm the not cool dad.
Yes.
Of Homer Simpson backing into the bushes.
Yeah,
or he just disappears into the bushes. When I think what we all really want is just to run our restaurants and take care of people and make people happy. And you know, it's this whole other thing that you have to entertain, you know, that you've been really great at, where the opposite happened. Social media, I was like, fuck this. Like, I don't want to have anything to do with this, and I don't have it, and we hardly post shit. And
I'm absolutely guilty of all of that.
Right.
I mean, I just walked away from it all. I'm like, I just don't have time.
Right. Because it's never going to look as good as Matt. No, that's not true. Well, no, it is true. It's 100% true.
We're not just placating her. That's true. And that's why I made a point of telling you earlier. It's like, dude, your photography, your shit is just on point.
It is on point.
And it's like,
it's just not fair. Like, my barbecue is not as good as y'all, so.
Well, we don't know because we never get to eat it, man.
This has come full circle.
Do you remember that Pecan Lodge is where I came when I got my vasectomy? Do you know this?
No.
Well, anyhow, this has to be recorded.
But I want to hear the story.
Yeah.
Your clickbait right there.
You, I mean. I think you probably knew at one point, but we didn't know each other very well, but.
I do vaguely remember something. So
this is true. And I've told this story about 200 times in the last couple of years, because anytime a guy tells me they're going to vasectomy, I roll the story out just to make them feel better. But so, you know, my wife was going to have more kids. You know, she had two, and I was like, she understood I want to have my own, you know, my own as well. So we had two more. And then at one point she was like, you're getting a vasectomy. And it was like quick. It wasn't like a lot of talk. Mm-hmm. And then I joked that she gave me the ultimatum. She's like, no, you're going to do it or we're not going to have sex. And it still never worked, by the way.
Right.
Dude, you're married a certain amount of time. So we go to Big Baylor. You were still in the farmer's market. So we go to Big Baylor and I go in, it's really high up, like urology office. And we sit down and the waiting room is just like, it's literally all these old men and they're not talking. And she's sitting beside me and she texts me. She goes, why are they so quiet? I go, and I said, because they know,
because they know what's about to happen.
So we go to the back, I go to my appointment and I remember I was wearing this like Dallas Stars, like track suit. And so the nurse comes in and, I'm hot. So I'm just taking my jacket off and she's like, no, don't take your clothes off. I said, I'm not taking my clothes off. I'm just hot. And she's like, okay, all these old men in here, they, you know, just get stripped real quick. So we get the consultation and we go to the counter and they're like, okay, when do you think about doing this? Like, when can we do it? No, tomorrow noon, let's do that. And she's like, no, wait. I said, you told me we got to do it. So made the appointment, came back next day or two, got it done. I don't think she feels bad because this happened at like warp speed. It mm-hmm. went from idea to I could smell it being cauterized. Sorry. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, I've been through that.
And so she's uncharacteristically extremely nice to me after. And she goes, well, what do you want to do? I go, I want to go to Pecan Lodge and eat. So we go to Pecan Lodge and I got like
right after the
seat. Yeah, no, straight there from Baylor over. So not even 5 minutes, right? Like
right, yes, right down.
Straight over. And I got a beef rib and I'll never forget it. So vasectomy, Matt, I've told that story a lot. So anytime Pecan Lodge comes up for a vasectomy, I bring the two together.
That's awesome.
My vasectomy was performed by my neighbor that was my best friend when I lived in Texarkana, Texas. I hadn't seen this dude since I moved away in seventh grade, right? And I'm in line at Stanley's. I'm walking one day and I see this guy and I look at him and I'm like, and he looks at me. I'm like, Matt? He's like, what's up, Nick? And I was like, holy shit, hadn't seen you in forever. He's like, I'm a doctor now. I work across the street. I'm a urologist. And I was like, wow, okay, cool. Good to see you. And I'd see him for lunch. And then finally one day we started talking about it. And I was like, yeah, okay, that's fine. I'll do it. And I was like, oh, I know a urologist. He was my neighbor when I was a kid. And so I go to Dr. Kincaid's office and it's the whole thing and make the appointment. And me and we're talking, we're just in the, you know, catching up on shit, talking. And he just finally, he looks at his watch. He's like, all right, man, well, let me see your nuts. And just like that, it's just, we changed direction. Then I'm standing there and I'm just, and Matt's got my balls in his hands. And I'm just like, this is crazy. And, yeah, that's my vasectomy story.
You didn't go get beef rib after?
No, I did not. I did milk the shit out of it though. That weekend, like it really wasn't that bad when it was done. But I was like, oh, shit. Oh, I milked it all weekend. I was like, yo, leave me alone. Don't come in here. And I just watched basketball and whatever was going on all weekend and sympathy bourbons and, yes. You know, lots of bags of cold peas. You're supposed to use cold peas as your
sympathy bourbon. I'm going to try that tonight. Yeah.
So, Dr. Kincaid, wherever you are out there, I appreciate that. It worked great. Thank you. And it was good to see you again, buddy. He left
right after my that. Balls. Like, no,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. He left right after that. I don't know where he went. He moved his practice.
He was there just for you.
Traumatic experience. Yeah,
I was the only patient he ever had, first and last, and then he's done. It was wild. Man. I remember watching Back to the Future with him. That was old school.
Yeah.
Not knowing that somewhere down the road, this kid was going to have my ball sack in his hands. Not again.
Not since the eighth grade has that man had his hand on my balls.
No, I left in seventh grade. I left in seventh grade. Way to get us talking about ball sacks, Matt.
Yeah, I know. We needed some clickbait, so I got it.
Matt, is tailgating still fun, or is it just work now?
It's definitely more work than it used to be because we're getting to a point where, like, it is fun, but I'm, like, wired to, like, entertain, you know, and so people come by like, oh, sit down, enjoy yourselves. And that's just, I don't know. That's why I do what I do. Cause I've always been like walking around, like taking care of people. It's the same thing our grandmothers did to us growing up in their homes. But now we've got, you know, partners, like we're doing a big tailgate with Pepsi. So We did one last year with Miller Lite, and you know, they'll do a lot of the heavy lifting, but that definitely is not just like having fun. You know, there's the work aspect. So I do try to limit those to like one or two so that the rest can be fun, but it is a production, especially now that we're like official with the Cowboys. People have this expectation, and you know, we're not trying to blow it out. Sometimes we're just trying to hang out with our buddies. And
right.
I mean, there'll be a tailgate or two where it's like, we're just drinking beer and we're not doing anything, you know, just to have fun. So
do you have to wear a disguise?
The cool thing about when I walk around Cowboys games now, people like bring me Miller Lights, like rant, like they're like, oh, you know, I don't know them. They're like, oh, hey, I can buy you a beer. I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool.
Nice.
Wish they'd bring me bourbon, but you know, we'll take the beer.
Do they have bourbon at the Cowboys games?
Not in Gin Pop. They probably up in the fancy suites.
Well, that's where you're at though, right?
Sometimes.
Didn't you barter one time to get box seats at a Cowboys game, Justin?
We didn't barter. We've been out there to cook before. I did barter for some landscaping recently.
That was smart move. Yeah. Smart move. All day, every day.
Do you have any culinary resources on your team to help with the prep? And so you're not, I mean, I think about having to do the events when it's like the events that we do, you know, and if it's, you never want to pull people from the restaurant if you can avoid it. And so you end up doing a lot of the work yourself, but that the lead up to it and all the logistics of getting things there and getting it set up is a lot. Do you have help with that? Or are you slugging
that stuff? I do now. So I have full-time chef and then another guy. So there's two guys on that team that, you know, they shop all the food, whether we're using food service or if it's not big enough, we're, you know, shopping in grocery stores. And then they're doing a lot of the prep. But that was new in the last 2 years. Two Octobers ago, I was driving to an event in Tennessee, and I literally never turned music on, if you can believe that. And I live for music. But I did it because I was at this time in my life where we were so chaotic. And I was like, what is making Matt Pittman busy and making lists and trying to strategically solve things? And the number one thing kept coming back to food. Like I did it all. I bought it. I prepped it. I cooked it. And obviously, as you guys know, we're in the wrong cuisine. Like we should have been hamburger guys, maybe a fried chicken or something. But so I finally did bring people in. It's not perfect, but it's way better. But the challenge also there is, you know, I don't want that part of the business to be a complete sinkhole for money.
Right.
So we've bought this new headquarters building that we've been in since last year. It has a big warehouse in it, and I've acquired all the commercial kitchen equipment, and now we're actually literally about to start building the actual kitchen to have an even better facility to do stuff in. So definitely something we've been focused on for a couple of years, because that's where things got rough with us when everything was on me. And events, like you said, take up so much time, whether it's a catering or a festival or whatever. They're running around and getting it and prepping it and, you know, making it at a level that people expect it to be at while getting everything loaded and everybody on the road is a huge pain in the ass. So that was probably the best thing I could ever do, is actually get people that could do that. So now it's awesome. I've got people that will, like for Troubadour, I've got two guys driving smokers down, you know, in advance. And so I do enjoy cooking things, obviously, like we all did. So I try to remember the joy in that. So like at this festival, I'll be doing the whole hog because something fun to do, but I definitely finally have people that can help.
That's good.
So if someone buys something off your website, is that like come to the headquarters? Like you got folks that ship and pack it there?
We do. So all of our direct consumer, we actually handle it all. So we pack it, we ship, and it's quick. Like if you order by, I mean, this is no guarantee, but basically if you're ordering by mid-afternoon, it's going out that day, unless we're in peak holiday season or something like that. But we take a lot of pride in it. Our stuff is blended, in between Fort Worth and Dallas, and we literally truck it over daily, 6 days a week right now, 7 days a week during the holidays, and multiple times a day during the holidays. We averaged 1,000 orders a day in the fourth quarter. Orders, not bottles. Crazy. It's pretty crazy. And then our wholesale stuff goes directly out of our co-packer, so it's really big now. So we don't actually bring that to us to ship out.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, we have stuff all over the place, and I know we're not doing what you guys are doing.
It's got to get crazy. It's a blessing and a curse, but during the fourth quarter, we do a ton of our business in the fourth quarter. There's a lot of, usually for the holidays, we're not very relaxed, if you can believe that, because it means a lot to me personally. And I'm not just saying this because we're recording this, but you know, we want to make sure it's going out the door. And as you guys know, post office, their updates suck during the fourth quarter. And we're the biggest postal customer in Ellis County. they don't care. They would prefer, the post office would prefer not to have us, if you want my honest opinion. But we send them so much that they don't scan it during the holidays. So the customer experience is actually pretty poor. You'll get a notice that we shipped, and then it just sits there until it gets to their post office. Mm-hmm. Looks like we're twiddling our thumbs, but we're not. Mm-hmm. But it's cheaper and faster than UPS and FedEx. So that's why we do it. But anyway, it's stressful in the fall.
Do you have any, is there anything that you're not doing now that's been kind of percolating in the back of your brain that you think you'd like to do?
Like in this business or in general?
I mean, in this business or something else that's been interesting to you to...
I mean, so this super low hanging fruit is we sell seasoning, and everyone's asking like, why don't you do barbecue sauce and stuff like that? And I don't want to, we've always tried to say, I don't want to be all things to all people, but we obviously have a very captive audience of what we do. So sauce makes sense. So you'll see that come out later this year. You know, it's interesting. Like I love what we do, and I don't think that bigger is always better. Mm-hmm. But I'm very competitive. Like I want to be kind of like the number one backyard seasoning. But people say, well, you should open up multiple Mean Church barbecue supplies across the country. And I really don't even want to think about it, much less do it. Everybody works to make money, but ultimately you'll realize money shouldn't be the first reason you do anything. And so we're really very fulfilled with what we do. I got to figure out a way to slow down because I've never honestly worked more hours or harder than I'm working right now. And it's like, no matter what we do, it seems to get worse. So I think right now it's kind of hard for me to be strategic. Which sounds silly because I lead the brand and it's my job to know where we're going, what we're going to do. So we're just kind of slowly, organically continuing to do what we do because we're happy with the business. Mm-hmm. But we need to get this headquarters building we bought built out, and like just we're currently focused on making it a really cool place to work. So we just decorated it and really trying to make our employees dig it. But I want to add some more buildings where we can possibly do our own shipping of our wholesale stuff and just to do a better job with it for people. But I don't really even currently have like major, like, oh, I want to go do this or I want to go do that. I think it's right now with my daughter being on maternity leave, my daughter-in-law, I'm like sucked in way more than I would be into the weeds. And so it's kind of hard to be real strategic outside of knowing we're going to launch sauce. We're looking at launching fuel. So, charcoal, chunks, chips, like those things all make sense. But like I said in the beginning, I'm not really trying to be all things to all people. You look at like a Myron Mixon, who's got his own smoker, and you know, I'm not.
That's your buddy, right, Wayne?
That's my buddy.
Not trying to have everything, so just expand where it makes sense. I mean, we're having fun right now, so it's, you know, definitely a good time. But one reason I don't want to go nuts is you guys all know kids grow up really quick, and our youngest being 12 and 14, I mean, she's 2/3 out of the house. I'm thinking she's got high school left, and she's gone.
Right.
So we shut things down for the summer. We have a home in Florida, and for the past 3 summers, we've gone there for the summer, and I've not taken an event. We did leave to go cook in Telluride for July 4th for the past couple of years. I passed on it this year to just hang with the family, and that's been – my wife never thought we'd do it. I was like, hey, what if we go to our Florida house and I don't work this summer? And she said, yeah, right. And we did it, and it was amazing. Life goes super quick, and I run them ragged. So to be able to do that was good, so definitely looking forward to that, but – yeah, back to your question. I don't have any like major like, oh, we must go do this. There's still really cool people I want to cook for. I've got this weird list. And like when I do that, that feels cool.
So how does that happen though? Like if there's someone you want to cook for, how does that connection get made? If, you know, whether it's Post Malone or whatever, how does that actually come to fruition that they know or that you, I mean.
It's a good question.
Have your people call their people?
Yeah. Well, so we don't, I don't. You know, I don't have any representation, or I don't even have PR, no agent, no manager, no nothing. So it's all been word of mouth. But the one I talk about a lot is George W. Bush had been the number one guy I wanted to cook for a long time. And it's really not a political thing. But when my corporate job, we cleared stock trades, the place my wife and I worked, and we were on 2 separate floors. And September 11th, I didn't see the first plane hit, but we all saw the second plane hit because we're watching TV. And I just thought, man, like, could you imagine being the president and leader like during that time? Crazy. And then obviously he owned, you know, the Rangers, and people say he's a great guy. And I know Aikman, and Aikman says he's wonderful. And so for whatever reason, beyond Michael Jordan, anybody else, I was like, I want to cook for that guy. And I'd get asked that on social media all the time, and I'd answer it. And finally one guy DM'd me and he said, I think I can make it happen.
No way.
And it ended up taking almost 2 years. But somebody reached out to me and said that he knows him, and you know, the backstory doesn't matter, but it went away for a long time. And then like in November, he calls me and says, hey, I know it's been a while since we talked, but it's about to happen. I knew exactly what he meant. So we went down to his ranch in Crawford, and that was one of the coolest days of my life. So super cool. So it's always like that. It's like, I believe good people help good people.
Right.
You know, it's that, but we don't actually literally try. Usually we don't, mm-hmm. we don't reach out. So we've been lucky, but I'm kind of shy and don't want to overstep, and I probably don't act shy, but I don't want to stick my nose where it doesn't belong. Like, oh, go ask that guy if I can cook for him. I don't really do that.
Well, what are some of the other top experiences of getting to cook for somebody who was like, not what maybe people would expect out of a celebrity, like who was just super down to earth and a lot of fun?
Well, I didn't cook for this guy, but you know, we went on the Tonight Show 2 Februarys ago, and Jimmy Fallon was like the coolest dude I've ever met. That was, and my wife was there for that.
Jimmy Fallon.
It was amazing. She always tell people she doesn't care about celebrity stuff I get, which is good. Like, she's very grounded and like, I don't care. But the day I got an email, I got it from NBC, and I called her. She was at lunch with her friends, and she was like, what? She went crazy. So she went on that one.
I watched that.
That was neat. It was there with Billy Durney, crazy enough, but went backstage, met him during rehearsals, and he grabbed a ball of my holy cow. He goes, man, I put this on everything. I said, what? And he's like, yeah, man. And I said, well, how do you know about us? And he said, well, during COVID, I started cooking. He's like, I started watching this guy's videos. I'm like, who is this guy? He's pretty funny. I said, wait, you think I'm funny? He's like, yeah, dude, you're hilarious. So I hit my wife. I go, you hear this? This guy's on Saturday Night Live. He says I'm funny. She's like, you're not funny.
That's awesome.
But he was, I mean, the nicest guy ever.
I love Jennifer.
I know you'd appreciate this, Wayne, especially, but they told us we could bring a secret weapon. So I literally found the biggest rack of beef ribs I've ever seen in my life. Humongous. And I took beef ribs. And what's funny is I froze them, put them in my suitcase wrapped in sweatpants. Go to a hotel, and yeah, like literally it's real food safe. They were frozen. But so I go in, my secret weapon's beef ribs. And then Billy gets there, his secret weapon's beef ribs. He said, because I knew you'd bring beef ribs. It's like, touche.
I watched that. Was Questlove on your team?
No, Questlove's the one judging.
Okay, he was a judge.
He was the one that screwed me.
Did you get to hang out with him? He's just the coolest guy.
They were all so cool. No, just there in that moment. But, you know, he went away to judge it and had his cone of silence or whatever and came back. Yeah. And he looked at their food and started laughing. He knew it was theirs. So he pointed, I can't remember, he wrote one or two down wrong. So he put it in the ballot box wrong. But I mean, if you watch it, you see me going, there's some confusion there. But my kids were highly upset because the prize was this big golden chicken wing, and they thought I'd be bringing it home. You weren't literally bringing it home. It's just a prop. But they were fired up. They literally were mad.
You don't actually get it.
No.
I'm writing a letter for you, Matt.
Do that. I'm going to talk. CC it to Billy Durney, Hometown Barbecue.
You got it.
No, it worked out good because Billy was like, y'all want to go eat after? And, you know, Billy knows everybody in New York. So we proceed to go down and have this amazing Italian meal with all this wine, and
oh my god,
you know, Billy's got it all handled like perfect, like mob boss style, you know.
Totally. He's
king of hospitality.
Yes, he is.
Worked out good. He's great. I know, like I said, didn't cook for him, but I think, you know, one of the ones I was more taken back by was Troy Aikman when I first met him. Just, he's the most healthy
human. Troy Aikman?
Yeah. You sound like my 12-year-old. He met him at 8 and was like, I heard you played. True story. Sam didn't care about football. I took him to his house to take a Traeger to his house. Sam looked at Troy and said, I heard you played football. Troy said, I did. And Sam asked him, he goes, well, were you any good? And Troy said, I was all right. And then this is best. And Sam goes, well, do you have any trophies? And Troy goes, yeah, I've got 3. And I was like,
this is amazing.
So he loved it. And now Sam's a big football kid ever since. And Troy will tell you that story.
And I bet Sam tells that story completely differently to his friends now. Like, my daughter, when she met Dave Grohl, was crying and complaining and screaming and flipping out and not wanting to be there. And now when she tells the story, she's like, yeah, Dave Grohl came to our restaurant. And I was like, yeah, and you were the reason why he left. you were not very nice.
Talk about the coolest guy in, I mean, I can't say in barbecue, but you know, he went to Memphis in May years ago. I was landing. You know, when your phone finally starts working, you're about to land, and all the guys are like, you just missed Dave Grohl. Uh-huh. And I'm like, dude, huge Foo Fighters fan. So anyway, he ends up being there for the whole weekend, but I was on a shot luge with him.
No.
And he doesn't know me, church, knows nothing about me. And oh yeah, so we're both doing shots, and I was like, all right, man, I gotta ask him to take a picture. And he said, well, if you didn't ask me, I was gonna ask you. I was like, I'll never forget that line. He didn't know who the hell I was, but it was cool.
And that's what's funny. When he was at our spot, he has a selfie with me on his phone, and I never got a picture with him because I didn't want to. I was just trying to treat him like anyone else who was there. And we were, you know, telling everybody like, chill the fuck out. Like, yeah, he's just here eating. Don't fucking bother him. And we talked about Billy Durning. He loves Billy. And he's like, oh man, Billy's my friend. And, he's like, let me get a picture for Billy. And he took a picture on his cracked ass, beat up ass iPhone, you know, this millionaire mega, you know, dude's got this shitty phone. And
maybe my picture from Billy.
Maybe so. But I don't have a picture of me and Dave.
Maybe you can get the selfie and my chicken wing trophy.
I'm writing a letter. I'll include that. You probably can't talk about who you didn't enjoy working with, or because they always say don't meet your heroes, because someone could be a total dick. But not that I would.
I think normally you're going in to do something like this. They've all been. I haven't had any bad experiences. I did finally meet Coach McCarthy, you know, of the Cowboys a couple of weeks ago, not in cooking, but at a volleyball tournament, and he was not cool.
I met him at a volleyball tournament too.
Yeah.
Does your daughter play volleyball? Yeah. So does mine. I was at Nationals last year in line at Starbucks, and I turned around and Mike McCarthy's standing in line behind
me. I saw him at Lone Star, the one here, the huge one here,
yeah,
a month ago. And I know that his daughter plays the same. I know that his daughter's the same age because I've seen him at 14? Tournaments. But yeah, 14. So that's right.
14.
Yeah, mine just made 15. So
we got to talk about volleyball some other time. That would take five more hours.
Well, the good news for you is, as the volleyball dad is your demographic. Like, I can't wear meat shirt stuff at a volleyball tournament.
That's, dude, when people find out that, okay, at volleyball tournaments generally, or other team dads, when word kind of gets around, like, oh, he's got a barbecue joint in Texas. One of the first things people ask me, I swear to fucking God, is, do you know Matt Pittman? Do you know Meat Church? Swear to God.
Says all the guests.
No, dude. There's messages on my phone right now where I had to tell the volley dads, like,
that's funny.
I'm going to Texas to do my podcast, and I get to interview Matt, and they're like, no way. So, yeah, dude, you're in the volley dad. Sure.
That's for sure. But he, you know, she's playing the big 120 court tournament.
Yeah.
You know, not long ago. And, so obviously he's been gone for a while from the team, but he was sitting, his daughter's plays for Skyline, really good team. So he's on the like stadium court, but they're not playing. They're like not even warming up yet. He's just sitting there by himself. And I went and talked to him, and I never say this about people because I don't want to judge people in one interaction, but he was the opposite of cool. And all I did was I didn't bring up the team. I mean, indirectly, right. I said, he does a thing called Family Day where home game Sundays, they bring the whole family in on Saturday and they have food. It's mostly ice cream, but the Cowboys, you know, feed them, but they've brought me in each of the past couple of years to do barbecue on one meal. And it's super cool. You know, I mean, it's like kids, parents, and
right,
it's neat. But that was my foot in the door with them officially. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I just say, hey, appreciate you. Just want to tell you, hey, Matt with Meat Church, just want to tell you, thank you for letting me cook Family Day. Cool opportunity. He goes, yep. He's like, damn. Yeah. And so then I said, I shifted to volleyball and I brought up the club. I said, Skyline, huh? I said, my daughter-in-law played 4 years at Skyline, went on to play at A&M. He goes, yep, great club. And I was like, see you later.
Have a good day, man.
Yeah. And now our new coach, Brian Schottenheimer, the nicest, most talkative guy ever. Mm. Total opposite. So anyway, that wasn't a cooking experience, but yeah, I thought that was odd. But
volleyball tournaments are wild. So at McCarthy, freaking Steph Curry at a volleyball tournament. Vince Vaughn was at Nationals last year. Hmm. I mean, my daughter hit Peyton Manning's daughter in the face when they were warming up, and Peyton was sitting right there, and I was like, way to go. Like, I was going to go say what's up to Peyton Manning.
Send me the bill.
His girl needs an ice pack now.
Yeah. I don't know that girl that did that, but I just want to say
Don't know her. But it's pretty wild. That whole community is nuts. And
I went down to Waco for a tournament, and you want to know who gets a crowd way more than a Meat Church guy? Joanna Gaines was down there Waco. I cooked for them in January, and I told her, I said, I saw you at that Waco tournament last year. I said, I felt bad for you. Like, shoot, all the moms are on
there. Does she have a kid who plays volleyball too?
But she said they were taking off this season. I said, well, good for you. Yeah, same age.
My entire life has been consumed by travel volleyball. It's been never ending for years. There's supposed to be a break, but there's not.
And my daughter just made our top team last week, so it's going to get ratcheted up for me.
Well, congrats.
I'm super stoked for her.
I'm going to see you at a tournament one day.
I don't have this height that you have, so my daughter's got to be a good defensive player.
She's not tall.
Yeah, she is.
Okay.
She's not tall.
Sorry, guys. You don't understand the life of a volley dad.
What are we talking about?
You don't know.
Yeah. It may have potentially ruined kids' sports, but we could talk about that later.
Yes, we can. We can. And it's a good thing that we have good jobs because it's
not cheap.
It is
the travel.
Yeah, dude. It's just a racket. Someone thought it a long truly time
is
a, ago.
They will tell you, it truly is a business. Like it is a business at the core. They might want these girls to go do something. I'm sure they do, but it is a business at the core. Like tournaments we go to are, like $35 a person to go in for each day. And like, I'm doing the math. I'm always doing the math. Like, oh, look how much this place just made.
Yeah, you have to pay to go watch your own kid play all day.
We play at one gym this year. We had six or seven tournaments at one gym. And on the concessions stand menu, I always take a picture of the first two items are ibuprofen and earplugs. That's a true story.
Yeah. My tinnitus is so bad right now because of that, the tournament sound that is nothing but. And I took out my decibel meter at the last tournament. It was a constant. About 96 decibels.
Wow.
Of sneaker squeaks and the girls whistles. Screaming the whistles and the referee insane. Whistles and then everyone celebrating. I mean, it's nuts.
I'm just, when you called me for this, I was like, you three people don't need anything else to do. So I got to know, how did this come about? Oh, I got an idea.
That's essentially it.
He texted me at like 5 a.m. He said, you up? And I said, Justin, is this a booty call?
That's the way
he said. I had an idea. Never mind, it's stupid. And I was like, dude, you got to spill it now, man. And so that text came in the morning. It's like, what if we did a podcast? And I was just like, well, with who else? And fucking A, here we are. There's just something about being here together because that's a huge part of it to me is getting to see these guys.
You're winning before you even start doing this.
Yeah, and even if nothing happens, like I will forever be grateful for just the chance to rekindle with these guys and get to see you again and have a chance to just sit down and talk. And
that's why my system's like, I can't believe you're going to do a podcast because I say no about 90 times a week. I was like, no, I'm not saying no to these guys.
And I mean, if Matt Pittman isn't going to say no to these guys, why would you? Well, there you go. Episode 1 in the books. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever you find it. Follow us on the gram at smokeless_podcast and hit us up on the web at smokelesspodcast.com. Thanks again to our guest today, Matt Pittman. Oh, and one more thing. Texas Monthly may not know where to find the best barbecue in Dallas, but our newest friend, Tom Cruise, does. Thanks again for popping in, Tom. It was great seeing you over at the Pecan Lodge. For Justin, Nick, and Wayne, I'm Clinton. Thanks for listening to Smokeless.